what is the venue then?
Probably it's a much more work than we are anticipating. It's a lot of work actually, if we want to submit.
What if, so I guess there are multiple things that could happen, right?
Even I'm hoping that the HPCA paper will be accepted.
Right.
Based on the reviews.
It's sort of 50-50 in my opinion. Because there were a couple of reviewers who were not so positive about it.
However, saying that probably if one influential committee member is in favor of the paper, probably it will get in.
Yeah, that is true sometimes. That if there is one guy who really likes the work and he's very vocal during the PC meeting, then we have a better chance. So that may or may not happen. If it happens, then we get lucky. If it doesn't happen, then
we get submitted to another conference as well.
So the question is then, where do we submit it to? So if it gets rejected, then maybe we could still send something to Eurosys and refashion it to. Do you think that's appropriate, or there's another possibility, Sigmetrics?
Eurosys is not. I'm very sanguine about that. It's a very tough conference. It's a top level conference, and it's a real system conference.
But what is this word sanguine? According to me, is related to blood. I don't know what, but what is the interpretation?
Hopeful.
Hopeful. Maybe my English needs some polishing. Sanguine. It's a word that I'm hearing after a very, very long time, and when I hear sanguine, I see blood.
Probably you're reading too much research related things. Not really.
I do read some other stuff, but yeah, most of my reading is research. Anyway, so you think that Eurosys is not very promising for this kind of work?
Yeah, I think so. Eurosys is a tough conference, so unless it's a really robust work, I don't think we could get in.
Okay, so what are the alternatives? Have you investigated?
Probably later in Usenix and Voltec.
Oh, if you think Eurosys is competitive, Usenix is even more competitive.
No, by the time I would have some more work,
I see.
Lab, like online model updation. If that is done, then it's a strong paper.
True. But do you know that the notification date of Eurosys is before the Usenix technical?
Not sure.
I know. I'm telling you that Eurosys notification is before the Usenix technical. So one thing which we could do is make some improvements and send it to Eurosys. If it gets in, great, and then we can do the full submission or the more advanced problem submission.
My target is to that, even if whatever be the case, is to get the dynamic resource allocation part done for the Usenix and Voltec conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reasonable date, I guess, is January.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could target, let's say, December 20th, December 21st, December, the third week of December.
Third week of December, it gets tricky because, that time is vacation time. So if you want to submit to Usenix,
even earlier,
you have to target...
let's say, second week of December.
Yeah, exactly. December 15th, it should be done.
December 15th, exactly. After that, we should forget.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the time is... everyone...
I don't know why Usenix sets time like 5th of January. It's a weird time.
It is certainly weird, yeah. But that's the historical date. And it's always been like that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, most people whom I talk to say, if you want to submit to Usenix, you had to have it ready before the vacation. Otherwise, there is very little chance that you have a good submission.
I guess 15th is a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I mean, the stage we are in, we could get the implementation and everything done in 2 to 2 months and all the experiments.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's okay.
So anyway, in either case, even if you get accepted or it's rejected, so I'm targeting Usenix and Voltec.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is that if it does get rejected, this version of the paper, you could potentially send it to Eurosys with some improvements, right, minor improvements.
So that made it, what will be the improvements we should focus?
let's go back to the reviews, and there are certain improvements that we discussed in the previous, and those improvements we need to do, because if it does get accepted,
even in that case we need to do.
We need to do them because
for the
we promised to do
camera ready version.
Yeah, and so we could do the same improvements for the Eurosys.
So actually, what I've seen in the review is that nobody asked for more work to do. It's sort of very few things we need to add.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in their critical comments,
mm-hmm.
it's very few things. One is only the profiling thing.
Mm-hmm.
One is asking for answer. Another are really minor things.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody asked any major thing to add.
Yeah. So I remember in our previous discussion, we did identify those requirements explicitly, right? What are the new things that we need to add? So
those are really minor, apart from profiling.
So one thing which I would suggest is that you address those comments right away, okay? Because if it doesn't get accepted, we have a stronger submission for Eurosys, okay? And if it does get accepted, then we get the camera ready requirements out of the way
as early as possible.
As early as possible, right? So therefore, and plus, you probably want to, you know, especially the performance counters and things like that, you probably will need some time to get oriented towards that, right?
Yeah. As I remember, is that for the profiling in my machine, I tried to install it, but it couldn't install. So finally, I installed it in Jorge's machine.
I see. Okay. Hmm.
So there are some problems with the processor family.
Hmm.
That are some conflict with the profiling tools.
One thing which you could do is to run the same benchmarks on the new machine.
Oh, that would be great.
And then we find out if the same anomalies that we see in the other appear on this new platform. If they do, then we could hypothesize that the explanation.
But Luis says that he is using PARF counter instead of OProfile.
I don't really know.
That's
which
the
one.
That's the one the reviewer also pointed out. The PARF, mm-hmm. the PARF thing.
Yeah.
And Luis is
saying performance counters are just a generic name for the hardware counters. Okay. That aid in the monitoring of the status mm-hmm. and things like that. And so it's sort of a generic
term.
Is it okay
to run the experiment on another machine?
Ideally not. But what I'm saying is that if we can reproduce the same behavior on the different machine, and we can actually get easily performance counter information,
then it's a better idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting.
So the first step is, can we reproduce the same behavior or not?
That's a good one.
The trends, right? Can we reproduce the same trends?
But
I mean, if we are using the same virtualization mechanism, if we are using the same
then I have to use the same setup, same allocation.
Yeah, I mean, that is the assumption, that you're using the same allocations, the same, you know, Zen stuff, and then you monitor, you get the same anomalous behaviors as the ones that we are trying to explain in the paper explicitly.
But it's a quad-core machine, so I'm not sure how can we.
But if you tie one VM to one core, and the one that you had before was a dual core, right?
Dual core.
Right. So I guess the first step is to reproduce that behavior ASAP. If you can reproduce it, then we can use the machine. If you cannot reproduce it, then we cannot use the machine. Right. Because we are trying to explain that behavior using the perf counters. If the behavior doesn't exist, we cannot use the perf counters. In that case, we have to go back to your machine and try to figure out what, or maybe some other machine which demonstrates the same behavior.
So I will try to do both of the things, because anyway I have to install all those Zen and profiling counters in the new machine.
Mm-hmm.
So I will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'll try to fix if I can to install profile in my machine.
Mm-hmm.
That would be
okay. Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. I mean, we are going to have Luis and discussion with Luis and Ricardo about this performance counter stuff. So you're welcome to join. It's going to be right after at 4:00.
Okay,
that's right.
Ricardo especially has a better knowledge about the performance counters.
Yeah, so we are going to discuss some things specifically with respect to, you know, one of the projects that we're doing. But I'm sure that if you sit in on that meeting, you'll also get something useful.
Okay.
So feel free to join us at 4.
So the right time. I think that's a better idea. I mean, first get those jobs done, and for anyway, because if it is rejected, we are going to send for overseas. Let's put it away, and then that's better.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. All right. So I guess we have a plan for the time being, and it's reasonable.
Yeah, but I'm optimistic. It will be accepted.
I mean, I think it's important to keep your spirits up, right? And I mean, if it gets rejected, don't get too disappointed, because I mean, in any conference like this earlier, I mean, when my initial papers were rejected, I used to feel, oh, the reviewers must be stupid. You know, how can they reject this paper? It's so great. And of course, you start coming up with all kinds of reasons as to why this paper should not
have been rejected. No, but I wouldn't be disappointed if the reviews are bad.
Yeah.
But if the reviews are good, even if it does get accepted,
if it doesn't get accepted,
then it's
a
problem.
Then the problem is that what you really don't know about the rest of the submissions.
Like, yeah.
Maybe your paper was just borderline, and it couldn't make it because there were other papers that people thought were better. Right?
Or maybe there are more related to hardware.
Yeah.
It could be. That's the negative argument that could play.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. There was one reviewer who pointed out that maybe, you know, this paper doesn't look like an HPC paper. And so that could be. But I don't think it was really forceful about it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other reviewers didn't have this comment.
Because the topic I chose for this paper is performance modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really specific. So if we don't have any strong papers, then that it depends on other papers, as you're right.
Yeah, it really depends. And you know, I used to get very frustrated initially when the papers get rejected, but over time I just, you know, say, okay, rejected, that's fine, accepted, great, but you know, let's just keep going, right? I mean, that's the only approach that works. As you might think that, you know, I've seen instances where multiple papers are submitted to the same conference, the paper that I thought should really get in doesn't get in, and another weaker paper gets in, right? So it's just, there are so many things that could happen that can choose or reject a given paper, right? And in your opinion, you might have a stronger submission versus a weaker submission. A weaker submission gets in, the stronger submission doesn't. And that's because in the set of reviewers,
the thing is that even with good reviews, if it didn't get in, it's really hard to improve. I mean, I don't find any possible scenario where I can improve the paper. It's hard, I mean, because I cannot say why it gets in.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's just it becomes a matter of reviewer taste, right? And you hope that during the next submission, the reviewers that are going to read your paper have better taste. Whatever you want to.
And if there is strong comment, then it's okay. I mean, then we can improve it.
Yeah.
But even there is a paper is good, but it didn't get in.
Yeah, that's because there are many good papers. There are just too many good papers that people thought they were all good, right? And they have a limited amount of space in the program, and they cannot accept all the papers.
But
and
they have a hard limit on the number of accepted papers.
Yeah, usually they do. Usually it's either 18 or 21 or 24 or 27. Okay, it's a multiple of 3 because someone has done research that people can only hear about 3 ideas in a short period of time. So when you go to conferences, you'll always see sessions which have 3 papers in them,
yeah,
at most. Right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are 2 papers. And then you count the number of sessions that you can do over a 2-day period.
Yeah, 2 or 3 days maximum.
Okay, so in one day, if you can do 9 papers, then in 2 days, you can do 18 papers. If it's a 2.5 day, then you can do 24, perhaps. So, and that's how it works. So they have a hard limit. But that limit changes every year. I mean, it could, I shouldn't say it changes, but it could change year over year. You know, last year, for instance, this autonomic computing conference suddenly shrank their program substantially. ICAC.
ICAC.
Yeah, and they had very few papers in the program. and the previous year they had a lot more papers. So the acceptance rates also changes. So changes from 24% to 16% because you accept fewer papers.
Okay.
And create a smaller program. So there's a
so ICAC would be another venue I could target, right, in future probably for my type of work.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that might be a reasonable venue. So it could be.
I mean, that would be very appropriate, venue, I would say, rather than targeting universities. Or because it's about autonomic computing.
True. Look at the ICAC call for papers for this year and see what.
I get the talk of virtualization related papers.
Right, but you know, we had a bad experience with ICAC last year.
Okay.
Everybody said that the paper was great, but it was unrelated to autonomic computing. And the paper was about, you know, Ricardo's paper on IoT duplication. The whole idea was how do you self-optimize. But they said that it's not really
compatible with.
Yeah, I mean, they said it's like, yes, you have a self-optimizing system, but what are the autonomic computing theories that you're using, right? So, I mean, all the reviewers said great papers, and then everyone said...
But Ricardo has one ICAC paper, right?
He does, yeah. But that was...
with security.
Yeah, with security. And last year also, maybe if they had accepted more papers, then you know, they shrank the program, like I told you. It could also be a consequence of that. So, yeah, I mean, ICAC is hit or miss. It depends on, and we have to be very careful how we write the paper if we send it to ICAC to make sure that we put in all the keywords that they want to see. Sometimes it's just a matter of the language. If you write it in a certain way, they feel that it's relevant to ICAC. If you don't write it in that way, then they see that, okay, yes, this is a computer architecture paper and they should not.
But even I have conflicting reviews on our paper because some people said it's a great write. One reviewer said it's not a very well organized write.
Remember that people are reading all kinds of papers. I mean, if you are reading, let's say, papers from conferences that have very high quality of writing, then as a reader, your standards already go up. On the other hand, if you read papers from conferences where the, let's say, the ideas are very good, but the quality of writing may not be that good, then your expectation as a reviewer would be substantially lesser in terms of the writing quality. So this is a reviewer dependent, and it is dependent on what the reviewer has been doing, what kind of papers that he has been reading.
Yeah.
So if you keep reading a lot of OSDI papers, okay, which typically get published after 3 years, right, and they've gone through so many revisions that you know, all the things have been addressed, the writing is great, absolutely. And if you keep reading only such papers, then obviously your threshold for bad writing is really high.
You think that all the papers should be of that quality.
Yeah. So it really depends on what the reviewer has been reading.
But how do you change with, for example, if I send it to autonomic computing, how that would affect? Because both are somehow high-performance computing.
You have to look at the call for papers carefully and look at the topics. And align the paper to one of those topics, you know, strongly look at the theme of the conference, what is it that, the kind of material that they have been publishing in the past. And you can ask reviews, Ricardo for the reviews for his ICAC submission, and look at the kind of reviews that he got back to get you a better idea about what you might want to worry about when you're submitting to ICAC. Although these are completely unrelated ideas,
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if you get back the similar comments. Okay, because we are not in the ICAC community, at least I don't consider myself in the ICAC community, but they have like very interesting way of thinking.
I think Ming has some ICAC papers.
Yeah, I think he does.
Okay. Yeah. Probably using his annual take is before ICAC, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so for instance, one possibility is that HPCA gets rejected, we send it to Eurosys, it gets rejected again, then we have two papers potentially, right? And we could send one to ICAC, one to USENIX Technical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another strategy. I mean, I don't want these papers to be rejected, right? Just to have two papers to submit to two conferences, but I mean, just that's a possible. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
But if it is good, if it gets accepted, then we have something done and worry about.
The earlier it gets in, the less we have to worry about competition, right?
Yeah.
Because who knows what other people are trying to do? Maybe they're trying to get similar ideas published too. And then it's always the guy who does it first who gets all the credit, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
Yeah.
Because like Ulysses, last year they have a resource management paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. So I think that's strategies for handling paper submissions. And I think at this point you have many choices, so you don't have to really worry. So we are targeting for the next paper USENIX at this point, and I think that's a realistic target. I think Eurosys might be certainly a bit of a rush.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible. For Eurosys, we need something very complete work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the ideas that we were discussing last
year
and what.
So the thing is that because can I go to the board?
Yeah, you can erase that.
So the ideas we are talking about is that we choose a metric. We choose a metric for DW.
Uh-huh.
That's a derivative of with respect to all those things.
Uh-huh.
Right? And we decided to use this metric for sort of some greedy algorithm.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's say we have this sorted for all applications.
Uh-huh.
And so the but as we discussed that this number of DWs could be really long.
Large.
Really large.
Uh-huh.
Because we have too many possibilities.
Right.
Because it's just change in one value. This
with others kept constant.
With others kept constant. So
uh-huh.
We could have multiple combinations of the value.
Sure.
So let's say we have all the combinations and we sorted each of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sorted all those things. Because after all, it's single value.
So this is for one VM. This is for one application.
Yeah, but we could have all those combined. Because it's sort of a value, because we have to compute that. It's a notation, but it actually indicates change in for profit as you change one dimension.
As you change one dimension for one application.
Right? For one application, keeping others constant.
The way I was thinking about this is that you change... you want to find out for each application what change provides the maximum return, right? And what change affects performance or affects the profit in the least way.
Right? Yeah.
So we want to do this computation for each application and okay. And then we want to, so for all applications, we have change in the profit as you change each of those dimensions.
We have those values computed.
Yeah, we have those values pre-computed.
Pre-computed with the help of model.
Okay. Computed with the help of model.
So,
now the thing here is that because we are talking about online in this case, the model also changes, right, as we update the model. So these three computations also we need to be recomputed, isn't it? If the model changes.
No, but we do it after each iteration. Let's say the algorithm stops here. After it stops here, at some point the model will be updated, and then it will update those values as well.
So I guess my question is that you remember that what I told you, that let's simplify to one parameter here. Okay, so let me just call it input parameter, di. Okay, some input parameter. And then I have w here, I have I here. Now w is a function, y, right? Now here we want, I don't remember exactly the notation, but I think the notation is
this,
at I equals some point. No, not at t.
Okay, I equals, that's the 20.
Yeah, okay, 20. So this is I equals 20, and we want to find out the value of dw here.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we would need dw pre-computed for all the values of I, right? Because we don't know what value of I we are currently at, or what value of I we are going to be using in the future.
No, but why do we have to be pre-computed? I mean, you could compute at that instant with the help of the model.
You could, but then the question is how much time does it take to compute all of that for each value of I? And if I is 10 to the 3,
it's not a really long time.
Okay, so it's a constant amount of time, but the question is that time small enough so that we can do online updating? And
it's a matter of, let's say, 10 to the power 3 number of predictions, right? You can say that it's really small. With our modeling, it's really small amount of time.
How much time do we take for one prediction?
It's even less than milliseconds, probably.
Okay.
It's a CPU time. It depends on CPU.
Okay. And the other question is, how many values of I do we need to compute this for?
Well, we compute it depends on the number of partitions you do.
Sure. So,
because we are talking about some intervals,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's say I is at 20, the current allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So we will do plus minus 5 plus 5 in this range.
Mm-hmm. So these are the values that are going to be calculated as the model changes.
Yes.
Because the current allocation is 20. And
mm-hmm.
I don't really care about 100, an allocation of 100, because
no.
That's not relevant for the next interval.
No, we do it incrementally. So the problem here is that whatever solution we will propose, it will be suboptimal. You cannot say it's the optimal point at that moment, because we are not changing drastically.
Mm-hmm. So it's a local optimum.
It's a local optimum.
The reason for not changing it drastically,
because of the competition IO.
Okay, so that's one reason. I mean, maybe there are other reasons.
Yeah.
Our goal is to motivate this idea of incremental and gradual changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, but then someone might argue, what happens if you just get stuck in local optima?
I mean, we are not. I mean, thing is that we can reduce the number of reconfiguration intervals. I mean, let's say we do it each minute,
mm-hmm.
then we keep changing.
Yes, but I'm saying that it is possible that there are local optima, and because you do not allow large changes, you sort of get stuck in the local optima, because on either side of this local optima, you get bad profit, worse profit. So you naturally go and stick in there, and you cannot see, it's like tortoise inside the well, right?
Uh-huh.
That's the whole world for the tortoise. It's the same thing with local optima.
Yeah.
Right? You're stuck inside the well thinking that it's the best place on earth. But the problem is that you cannot see beyond the well. Which is, which is exactly this point. Okay, so this is your
value. Yeah, this is the word.
And this is the local optimum.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there is a better actually, you know, that it's not true. I mean, I want more profit. So, yeah, so it's sort of the reverse. So this is the place I get stuck in, but then it turns out that there is something else up there. Right, but I cannot make this drastic change from here to here because I would be required to change from, I don't know, maybe 10 to 70. And that's not really possible. If I change 5, I change 5 here, I see that I get worse profit, so better stay here. So I keep staying there. So then the question is, I mean, how do we deal with this solution? And it's another question for you to think about. Because we disallow gradual changes, some reviewer might say, okay, what about local
option? Is it a feasible SLA card? I don't think so.
Hmm?
Is it a feasible SLA card? I don't think so.
No, this is not an SLA curve, right? It is both a performance model and an SLA curve. The performance can be arbitrary. Remember that these are input parameters. From input, we go to performance. From performance, we go to profit. So this is sort of merging those two into one graph. The performance behavior can be arbitrarily complex, right?
Performance behavior can be complex.
And although the SLA curve may be straightforward, when you merge these two, therefore, the resulting can be complex. Now, think about the any of the benchmark applications, right? And we have these unexpected behaviors start increasing first, the performance increases, and beyond a certain point, performance decreases. Right, so it's a complex thing, right? And it's a toxic model, or whatever that is, which is what we're trying to model with. And I'm expecting that sigmoidal is a complex function that has local and global optimum and things like that. And then you map it onto an SLA, the resulting merged function that maps input to SLA or input to profit is going to be complex again, naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sort of it will follow the some kind of performance trend as well.
Yeah, it will follow the performance trend, and then so it's like a function. So profit is a function of performance, okay, and then which is of course a performance a function of
function of output
of
function of input
of input. So in the end, profit is a function of input.
Mm.
Right.
That could be as complex.
And that could be as complex as this. So that's one thing to worry about. Well, what are the drawbacks of
incremental approach?
And what you're saying is that we do not guarantee that the system will be in the best possible in terms of a single application, right? So it could be that the reason why we are stuck in this local optimum is because we are in the global optimum for other applications which are much more productive, I mean, which give much higher returns. Can we prove something like that? Can we actually claim that is the case? The reason we are stuck in the local optimum is because going to the global optimum will lead to a lower profit in another more profitable application, right? So those are the kind of questions that we need to think about. So what I'm saying here is that, okay, you have, so let's sort of take it one iteration at a time. So in each iteration, let's say that I have to do a reallocation of resources. To do the reallocation of resources, I'm going to consult an oracle that will tell me what should be the increments or decrements of each resource dimension for each VM. And it could be that some VMs don't change in their allocations at all. And the question is, how does that oracle work?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it says that if we do incremental changes, we don't need to worry about many values or many intermediate values because we are already doing incremental shift in the resources.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we only need to store value of I equals 20, I equals 25, and I equals 15.
So you're saying that do coarse-grained reallocation instead of saying, okay, I can do I equals 20, I can do 20. So one possibility is that 20, I could do 22,
24, 26, 28, 30. That level of fine-grained reallocation is not possible.
18, 14, so on.
I mean, you won't see any outcome if you change from 14 to 16 inch then. You won't see any changes. That's for sure.
Why? I mean, are you speaking just because of your experience?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I see, the thing is that when we are talking about writing a research paper, we need to go beyond the experience. We need to understand why, right? If it is experience, then certainly you have some reason to investigate further that indeed these small changes do not make any difference.
Okay.
But we need to say in the paper why that is the case. Why? I mean, and in some applications, we saw that even small amount of memory can make a huge difference, right?
Memory can make a huge difference.
So, I mean, this is not necessarily CPU because we are talking about multiple different dimensions. So memory could be, so we have to suggest some kind of generic method that we want to use. So maybe for CPU, the sensitivity is not 2, but rather 5. So maybe we have more points along this line, right? 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 maybe, something like that. And on this side, you have some more things. Okay, so that's another point, which is the increments depend on the sensitivity of to that resource for each application. So, I mean, that brings up another question. Do we use the same increments for all the applications or no?
No, that's not, that won't be.
But see, the thing is that the reason to use the same increments like paging, right? Because you take something away from one application, you need to give it to someone else. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you avoid fragmentation. Because now we are talking about avoiding fragmentation of allocation. So having them in the same units is beneficial to avoid the fragmentation issue of how, what will happen when you allocate less resources to an application where its unit of allocation or unit of modeling and prediction is greater than what you allocated. And then you have a complex question, okay, what is the performance for this small value? Okay. Either is it the lower bound or the upper bound, and things of that nature.
Yeah, but you cannot take each increment. I mean, for memory, you 5 is not enough. You have to take, let's say, 32.
No, I'm not talking about keeping the increments the same across the resource dimensions. I'm talking about keeping the increments the same across the applications.
Across the applications?
Across the applications, not resource dimensions. So, because if I take away 5% CPU from one application,
we have to take something, some 5% from another, not 5.
I need to give 5% to, well, or I could distribute it in some way. So, for instance, if the smallest amount of taking away and allocating is 5, then I could take, for instance, 10 from one application and give 5 each to two other applications. And that could be done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I can do that is because the unit of allocation, the smallest unit is 5. And I know that as long as I can break up the allocation units of 5, I can fit them nicely in place. So now the question is that, okay, what should be the increments along each resource dimension that will be applicable uniformly across all applications? Now, certainly those units are going to be different for different resource dimensions.
Mm-hmm. But even if you have those numbers calculated, what is the scenario now? I mean, we just forget about all those complexities now. Just in a simple case, even if in simple case, it's very hard. It's a, you have, okay, that's the first thing I propose. You have 15, 20, 25. You have these calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And for another application, it's calculated, let's say it is using 80% CPU.
Mm-hmm.
It's only two virtual machines, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you have calculations for 85,
mm-hmm.
75.
Correct.
Right? Now you choose, now you have all those values.
Mm-hmm.
And you figure out what is the, you find that W corresponding to this application is maximum.
Maximum for which allocation?
For C.
At 20.
At 20.
Okay, so you check with 15, you check with 25, and you found. 20 is still the best.
Let's go to 25.
Okay.
20. If you compare to the figures, let's say it's 20. No, in 20, we don't need to change anything. So let's 25.
Mm-hmm.
The problem here is that,
the first thing is that these sorted DWs,
mm-hmm.
are these from one application or from multiple applications?
It should be from multiple applications.
Okay, so they're all from different applications.
Mm-hmm.
So you, at any time you have a DW which tells you which application and which resource and how much. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And DWs are the highest value is the greatest profit, the greatest change in the profit. Greatest increase in the profit.
Profit across one dimension.
Okay, so carry on. Okay, so that's the scenario.
So you pick up that application,
mm-hmm.
and you do some changes to its assignment.
Now, first of all, you don't have additional resources to allocate to it. You need to take it away.
I need to take it away.
Mm-hmm.
So so how do I pick up the candidate 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that case.
15? No, you had to find out the source of the resource. Which application is going to provide the resource? Like which VM you're going to take the resource away from?
Yeah, okay, the victim.
Yes, victim.
So you have to pick up the victim. How do you pick up the victim is, the way I think is that you need to go to you need to look at the list and you need to find out, okay, what is the minimum change the application is offering.
Mm-hmm.
So
minimum change
across the dimension C.
Okay.
Because it's all,
how do you find that?
Because it's a sorted DWs.
Sorted DWs, but sorted DWs along all the dimensions, right? Along all the dimensions. So the sorted DWs are the following. If you have a DW, okay. And you have a resource. Right? These are your tuples. Oh, sorry, one more thing.
Application.
VM. VM ID. We have one application for you. DW, resource, VM ID. One, two. Goes on. This is what you have in a sorted list, sorted according to this field.
Yeah,
that's what you have suggested. Okay. That's what you have. So now the question is, how do we identify beneficiaries and victims?
The beneficiaries is easy to find out because of the DW values.
Okay. So what is the end? Don't you need to sort of maximize the DW of the beneficiary plus the DW of the victim? Isn't that what you need to maximize?
Well, this is a combined list.
What?
This is a combined list.
It's an ordered list.
Yes, so we need to, basically we need to maximize this.
So, how is the beneficiary easy to choose?
Beneficiary is easy because you know that these are the values.
Sure.
So, that's giving you the maximum increment at this position.
Right.
So
you choose the maximum increment of DW as the beneficiary?
Yeah.
Why? Because the corresponding victim may have substantially worse return on when you reduce. Right? So it could be this guy, it could be the beneficiary.
What I'm suggesting is that you start doing in this fashion. So it may not be this combination is the best. So you first pick up the DWs with best,
mm-hmm.
and pick up the DWs with worst.
Mm-hmm.
and try to match the resource type. If it doesn't match, you keep shifting.
That's the algorithm that you need to come up with. Okay, so you need, this is what we are going after. What is the formal algorithm to address this across multiple resource dimensions? Right, but it's not as simple as picking the first guy because he has the maximum.
No, no, because it's an iterative algorithm. You have to start with something. So you think that at first this is the best beneficiary, and you also select the candidate victim.
That's the best candidate victim.
You think that's the best victim, and you think you find out that if the resource type doesn't match, it doesn't make sense. So you keep shifting.
Which one do you shift?
The
victim.
The victim.
Why? Why not the beneficiary? Okay, so this is sort of simple. Like, you can do it, right? Because you're going to shift the one that's going to reduce or give you the least reduction in the benefit, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right? So you either choose shift the victim or the beneficiary, depending on that criteria. And have you seen this is very much like a sorting method.
Quick sort.
Right. Yeah. Quick sort. So you start shifting in both directions, not in one direction.
Yeah.
Because
you shift from top and you shift from bottom.
Because you want to explore all possibilities, right, and choose the best candidate. So use the quick sort idea to come up with an algorithm. Not hard. I mean, I think you figured out most of it. Now it's just a question of finalizing it and writing it down.
That's true. But still, let's say you shift it up for the finding. Let's say you, based on some criteria, you shifted the victim counter, and now the resource type matches. Right. So in that case, if the resource type matches, you add those two. Bluetooth stuff, right? So it could be that the result could be negative as well.
Without
Bluetooth.
I think then, which means that don't make any changes.
No, but
could it be that so let's say that I move this down and then move this up, and I realize that the gain is less than the loss.
Gain is less than the loss.
So this is BW. You put an absolute value of TWB is, I shouldn't say absolute, yes. DWB, this value plus DWB is less than 0. Could be less than 0. So which means that making that change
is actually losing. We are losing actually.
Yeah, you're losing by making that change.
So in that case, we shouldn't pick up that candidate.
Okay. And then what do you do next? Does it mean that there are no candidates at all?
No.
That will give a positive?
It could be, so we need to find out those conditions.
Correct. So the question is, how can you prove that, can you prove that you don't need to, you can stop after a while because there are no candidates that are going to give you a positive gain? Okay, so that's the second question. First is, come up with a quicksort-like algorithm that is going to take into account all the resource dimensions. Second is, how do I know for sure that I've reached the best possible choice, okay, or in some case there is no choice at all, right? And second is, how many times do I do it? Let's say I come up with a pair.
It's only one pair, but it could be whatever the shuffling of other pair.
Right. And the second question is, now you're only choosing one beneficiary and one victim. How about multiple beneficiaries and multiple victims? It could be that you have one beneficiary and two victims. Okay, so think about that. And that would work because you have, in this scenario, you have actually one victim, you're taking away 10 and giving 5-5 to two beneficiaries. Right? So think along those lines. Also, go back to the knapsack. Are there ways in which knapsack already does similar things?
No, I thought about a lot about knapsack. It's not. It's not. Feeling in, and still I'm not convinced how the knapsack would work. Because you don't do reorganization in knapsack. And in knapsack works in very simple way. Whatever be the complexity associated with it, non-linearity or incremental, it works in a simple way. You pick you pick a victim, I'm sorry, you pick a candidate, and you want to put maximum of this candidate in the sack before going to another one.
Well, see, the thing is that there may be variants of knapsack where the weight changes as you put some of it in there. Like that's the variant of knapsack.
There are some algorithms with the Gaussian weight function and something.
Where the weight actually changes, not that the weight remains constant. Those are the kind of knapsack functions that you need to be looking for. Knapsack problems.
But still, it's a problem that you put something here, and you, after you put something here, you forget about it, and keep moving.
Okay. And why is that a problem?
Is that a problem? Is that it may figure out that, let's say, you and so it may be possible that, let's say, VM1 is given 60% CPU in one dimension, 60% CPU, and you have 4 VMs, and VM2 is given the rest, because those seem more promising, because you work in this incremental fashion based on some metric. Then VM3 and VM4 will be completely left out.
0%?
Yeah. It's highly possible in NAPSAC. You don't, in NAPSAC, it's not a condition you have to put every element. You could leave out some materials completely.
But adding resources is always going to lead to a positive result, right? Or no benefit. It cannot be negative benefit, right? That's the basic assumption that we are making here, that giving more resources cannot degrade performance. I think that's the basic assumption that we will have to make, regardless of which solution we pick. And as long as that's true, then you need to sort of assign everything to the NAPSAC.
No. What I'm saying that in NAPSAC, I mean, it feels like object in the NAPSAC. You want to book and the stack is like 100% CPU, right? The way the NAPSAC was, whatever your candidate greedy metric, you pick one, you want to maximize its full profit, its individual full profit, before...
That's because the weight does not change as you start putting stuff from that category. What I'm saying is that the weight needs to change. Because our function is not a linear function. As you add more CPU to a VM, I don't get this behavior. If that were linear, then the simple knapsack could map to this problem. That's why we cannot use a simple knapsack, right? And that's why we're talking about this model of the
non-linear knapsack problem.
Non-linear knapsack. A non-linear knapsack will not maximize each because at some point, the incremental benefit of VM2 is going to increase.
There are some nonlinear knapsack problems which uses the derivatives, actually. Momentary eager derivatives.
Okay.
I looked at it. But even in that case, it could be that some VMs will be completely left out for some object.
Yeah, I guess that's okay, right? The key is that how do you assign the weights? If you want a severe penalty for some VMs to be completely left out, then you assign the weights accordingly, so that those VMs are not left out at all. How you do that is by saying that the amount of benefit for a small allocation for each VM is really high, and therefore it just makes sense to give that minimum allocation to all the VMs. Because subsequent allocations do not lead to substantially better gains, right? So you need to set up your function, your weight function, in such a way, your function that you're going to use the derivative.
Oh, that's the one you're explaining last time, right?
Yeah.
You didn't get it probably. So you're saying that start with 1 million, with some minimum allotment.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
And even if how it is. Guarantee it? Because you have to take 1 million anyway.
Yeah, because if you give everything to this guy, at the most you get 1.2 million.
Yeah.
Right? On the other hand, if you give minimum to this and this, you get 2 million. So that's how you will deal with such a situation.
Yeah, but that weight function with related to NAFSA is hard to find.
No, it's not, you set, it's not about setting up a weight function for that specific solution. The NAFSAC is a general solution. The question is, the weight function is an input. How do you set up the weight function as an independent, right? And if you set up the weight function correctly or in the right way, then you won't lead to a solution where two VMs are given everything and the rest of the VMs are not given anything.
That's only, if you figure it that way.
And the SLAs, that's the job of the SLA curve, isn't it? The job of the SLA curve is exactly
that. Some minimum profit will be there, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, the penalties are huge. I mean, here, if you don't give anything to VM3 and VM4, there's a substantial drop in profit because of those no allocations. Right. And that can be captured in the weight function.
It boils down to the given a weight function. Mm-hmm. You're assuming a weight function is there.
Yeah.
And it's a nonlinear weight function.
It's a nonlinear weight function. And it's a multidimensional
problem. Multidimensional NAFSA problem is well known.
Okay.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
So it's a multidimensional nonlinear weight function. Then how do you come up with a NAFSA solution?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. It's not a simple knapsack. It's an incremental knapsack, right? But that's the point, right? I mean, if there is an established solution and we actually identify a well-known solution and map it to our problem, I think people would probably believe us way more than otherwise if we just come up with something that on our own, which we could also use to compare against. Now, maybe there is no way that you can do an incremental knapsack, right?
Yeah.
Or reorganization of the knapsack. Maybe there, but I don't know. I mean, that's your job to find out such problems.
Yeah, I was looking around this. There are problems with
nonlinear
weight functions.
Incremental knapsack, multidimensional. These are the three requirements.
Yeah, there's. I have seen solutions for multidimensional and nonlinear weight functions. It's not.
So incremental knapsack, then you need
incremental knapsack is not yet I haven't found very convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably there are.
So spend some more time.
Knapsack I didn't know that before. It's a too huge problem. People discuss a lot of things about that.
Yeah, and that's because there are so many applications.
Yeah, it's just some improvement over knapsack or some additional NAFSAC constraint they add. And
remember that the theory guys, this is their full-time job to come up with new problem definitions. Okay.
Yeah, mostly those are management science papers or algorithm papers.
Algorithm papers, yeah. Those
or
are
management
science.
Yeah.
For management science, they motivate the NAFSAC problem based on a real-world scenario.
Yeah, they're giving some real-world scenario. And
therefore, their imagination is limited. What I'm telling you is that the theory guys, they just come up with imaginary problems which do not have any application at that point in time, at least. And their whole livelihood depends on coming up with new problems that are interesting and that are solvable.
Seems like it's not. I'm sure that the algorithm guys looked at it incremental.
I won't be surprised at all if they have looked at the incremental knapsack.
Yeah.
So look at that. I mean, and maybe these three dimensions or three solutions have been explored in isolation. The nonlinearity, the incremental.
Those are explained in isolation. What I'm talking, I found papers on nonlinearity.
Okay.
I found papers on multidimensional. So those are different.
Yeah, so then maybe the contribution that you can provide is, well, how do you combine these solutions into one solution? And that could still be a challenging and interesting problem.
The nonlinear, incremental is a challenging thing, right? No, it's again.
Mm.
The weight function, you are giving the weight function.
Mm. Yeah.
But this is also promising, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you want to make some notes of something on the board, feel free to do so. Otherwise, I'll call those guys in.
she will probably say that everything is not working. Everything
what?
Is not making sense.
No, but I mean, his main complaint was, well, look at existing solutions and don't try to invent new things if existing, well-established, well-researched solutions already exist. Okay, so I guess we're done.
Yeah.